Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds Podcast. I'm Matt DeAndrea here with Alistair Weaver. Oh, hello. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm all right. Thank you. Propped up by a bit of caffeine. It's late in the day here, but hanging on.
It's a little bit later today. We're kind of off schedule. We've been kind of running around. I know you guys have been out and creating content and testing stuff and kind of reeling in your social media team after spending a week with the Cybertruck, which was exciting. I'm glad we got to chat about that. Starting to hear more stuff about that as people start to drive them and get in them and cars are being delivered. And it's kind of an interesting thing. And then, you know, there's new stuff for sure. Like we know that's on the horizon. I think some of the big news is going to be Rivian, the small SUV, the R2, right?
R2, yeah.
Yeah, it's very Star Wars to me, but okay. Maybe we'll get some thoughts on that in a week because they're going to debut in a week and there's no real point in us speculating too much. All we know is supposed to be a lesser expensive, smaller SUV, something for the masses. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to see if it sort of competes with what Fisker's intention is with the Ocean and if they're going to go sort of head to head. And I think the winner is just going to be the car with the least amount of flaws.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's been a really weird, such a weird time in the EV market. So all these kind of great products that still, you know, coming out, Rivian's got the R2 next week, you know, Macan EV we're driving in April. We've got one on order. There's a ton of new stuff coming out, a lot of excitement around it. And yet at the same time, lots of these startups, Rivian's talking about cutting its workforce by 10%. Lucid's kind of not share prices is in the dirt. Fisker, we were recording this on Thursday. Fisker just came out and said, you know, basically we haven't got enough cash for the next year, so we're gonna have to heavily reinvest. The shares are kind of plummeting us literally as we speak. So Mercedes have come out and said, actually, you know, that whole thing where we said we're just gonna build EVs from 2030. Well, actually, we're not.
Yeah.
So
yeah, everyone's kind of backtracking.
Everybody's like, if you're on YouTube, you can see me kind of backpedaling here. So it's a really funny time because, and you know, the sentiment shift as well. We're seeing that a lot of people are just saying we're not ready. They're too expensive. The technology's not working. You know, GM is in a mess with a lot of its EVs, as we know, with the Chevy Blazer still on stop sale. Silverado's not really here. It's kind of like a fascinating time right now. And just almost day by day, stuff's happening.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I don't know who kind of started it, but I think it was Jim Farley at Ford when he launched the new Mustang and his intention to do all this racing and motorsports. And he basically said, well, we're just going to make high-performance Mustang gas engine cars as long as we can until somebody tells us we can't. And
America.
Then, right. And then, but I want to say that someone from Porsche basically echoed it, basically said it verbatim like a week or two ago, going, we're going to make gas engine 911 so somebody says we can't anymore. It was exactly the same quote. And I was like, yeah, it's starting to make sense. This whole like EV only future, it's okay to be an EV company. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a place for it. The Fiskers and Teslas and of the world, you know, Polestars and stuff, but some of the bigger car companies, I just don't think be making a switch to EV only is going to be the thing, you know. Well, I guess
at least until the legislation says that they have to. And it is interesting. Porsche has tried to hedge a bit by talking about synthetic fuels as well. Maybe we can get around this. We can have synthetic fuels. And the other thing that I went out for dinner a couple of weeks ago with the CEO of Emissions Analytics, which is a really fascinating research company out of the UK, but they do a lot of work over here. And, you know, they're saying that the contemporary diesel engine, if you've got all the treatment on it and everything else, is an extraordinary thing and very, very clean. But the politics of Dieselgate and the whole that whole, you know, saga has basically killed the diesel engine. So he created this incredible technology, which is basically now clean, and nobody will build, nobody will buy.
Right.
And so everything's a huge pivot.
And we're seeing, I don't know, I think Honda has just unveiled more hydrogen, right? A hydrogen vehicle. They're starting to invest
a hydrogen
bit more
CRV. But at the same time, Shell, even in LA, basically has come out and said, oh, we're shutting down the hydrogen, you know, the consumer hydrogen stations. I mean, I drove the hydrogen car in Japan like 20 years ago, and it was like, this is the future. It's amazing. But there's no infrastructure, and politically, everybody's decided it's got to be EV. So, you know, it's like that whole kind of lock-in theory. If you go back to the beginning of the 20th century, is, are we going to buy gas or are we going to buy steam? And it sounds ridiculous now, but like there was a period where steam cars looked like they were going to be the thing. Which is kind of interesting. Yeah. It's just water vapor.
It's almost like it would be interesting if a startup company, obviously something with well funded, a startup company started building just hydrogen from scratch, like Tesla has done with EV, and built their supercharger network of hydrogen refueling stations. If that was the plan, if somebody said, hey, we're going to build a hydrogen car, but really our business is going to be fueling stations, you know, hydrogen fueling stations. And if they did that, that could be kind of interesting. And then it would just end up being what Tesla has just done and going, well, we're opening up our supercharger networks to all these other manufacturers. They're all going to pay us a little bit of money. It's going to be a great revenue stream for us. And all these other cars are going to be able to use our supercharger network. Same thing with hydrogen. I'm surprised none of the big oil companies have committed to it. Like with the amount of money they have and the amount of lobbying power and relationships with the car manufacturers, why aren't they going to all the car manufacturers and going, everybody start building hydrogen and we will support it with hydrogen stations, you know, and ExxonMobil going, we're going to make, you know, 50,000, 100,000 stations to start. If you guys, you know, if they get three or four companies to go, we're going to do hydrygen vehicles, some hydrygen vehicles.
Well, it's probably shareholders probably wouldn't like it, but
Shell probably wouldn't be the one.
the one company actually that I've had that conversation with, I don't know how many people listening will be familiar with them, but a company called INEOS, which builds a Grenadier, and it's just gone on sale in the US, which is a fascinating story. I can't remember whether we talked about this on a show recently or whether I was just talking about it in the pub, but I went to the launch in London when I was still in the UK, probably about, what would it be, about 7 years ago now. And we went into this cute little pub in northern, in the center of London. And this eccentric guy said, I wanted to buy the Land Rover Defender, you know, the proper Defender. Land Rover wouldn't sell it to me. I don't like the new Defender. It's too much an SUV. I want a proper off-roader, so I'm going to build one. And it was just like, and at this time, like, nobody quite knew who the guy, well, he sort of knew who the guy was, but not really a lot of context. So he was this almost like secretive billionaire. So simply put a hand up and said, like, yeah, I mean, if you're going to do that, that's like, you know, you could be like in £700-800 million to do that. And he looked at this. Yeah, last year our profits were £4.5 billion. Just like, look, the guy down the other side. And you're like, okay. And since then, this is Jim Ratcliffe, or Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Since then, he's bought into the Mercedes Formula One team. He has a Tour de France cycle team. He's just bought a big chunk of Manchester United Football Club. So he's gone from being this kind of reclusive, secretive billionaire to this like public figure.
Yeah.
But he made his money from basically turning around struggling petrochemical companies. And I had a conversation with them about the Grenadier and said, and they were talking about hydrogen. And I was like, yeah, but like, where are you going to get the hydrogen from? They looked at me and said, we are literally the world's biggest supplier of hydrogen. And it was like the same conversation. So they were like, we can do a hydrogen version of one of these. And maybe we'll just put in an infrastructure. And now Honda's coming out. Hyundai has been quite into it. BMW is into it. You know, it's, and remember, like a hydrogen car, in essence, is just an electric car with an onboard generator. So you take the hydrogen, you combine it with oxygen, you use that to create electricity, which drives the motor. And then all it does is, all you create is H2O, which is water vapor. And so it's dead simple. The problem is, how do you create the hydrogen? How dirty is that? So where does the hydrogen come from? So if you're in somewhere like Denmark and it's all like wind power, whatever, happy days, if you're creating it from coal, you've got an issue. And then how do you transport it? But I mean, the good thing is when it works, it just comes out of a pump. So in theory, you could just repurpose all your chevrons and what have you. So there's additional issues with like how expensive it is to actually build all the onboard stuff. But yeah, I mean, in theory, it's a great solution. It's also a fantastic solution if you just want, if you have a bunkered fuel supply. So if you are like, let's say LA buses, and they all go home to a depot, or school buses, and they all go home to the school bus depot. Perfect for hydrogen, because then you just have a bunkered power supply, your own basically filling station.
Yeah,
way easier than loads of electricity ports.
Right, and they just have, you know, a tanker come by whatever once a week when it needs to refill their tanks on site or however they're doing it, which is fine. Yeah,
yeah, I'll be simplifying it, but basically, yeah. And the other thing you can do is hydrogen can run through an internal combustion engine. BMW had a bunch of basically like gas, to oversimplify, basically gas engined hydrogen cars running around. It's not, you know, there's all sorts of stuff you can do with it.
Is Porsche doing some racing with their e-fuels? Because they've been developing this e-fuel. Yeah. And on paper, like, I don't know enough about it, but they were like, it's clean burning, it's higher octane, it's kind of a win-win, but we can only make it like around the equator of the globe because it takes an incredible amount of energy. And all of it, they're doing it with solar energy. And they're like, we need to be as close to the sun as possible to do it. And maybe it's somebody that, is it Mazda who's also doing it with them, maybe? Yeah. I don't know if it independently or if we're with them.
Yeah, I think they're doing things like their one make series, like the Carrera Cup stuff. You know, again, it's like a bunkered fuel supply, right? When you've got a very specific use case. And I think Formula One's been looking at it years ago. I also did something around aviation fuel and, you know, similar idea, can use synthetic fuels for aviation. You know, again, where you've got like a group of cars and you can bring in your own fuel supply, it probably makes a lot of sense. I don't think, to your point, they can build it in enough volume to have it, you know, distributed across the US. But it might also be a way in the long, long term where people like me and you with old, you know, with classic gas powered cars, that we keep them on the road. So almost like when you went from leaded to unleaded petrol, gasoline, maybe you have a similar thing where we can kind of convert them to run on synthetic fuel.
Yeah. And if there's a way to even just kind of get it delivered, or if there was a couple of gas stations that are, you know, popped up that have that kind of stuff, that would be interesting. Or just have just have like your drums of VP fuel or whatever, in this case, some sort of e-fuel delivered to you. That would be kind of interesting, but
we might be dead by then. They might, you know, I think gas has got a little while to go.
A couple of weeks ago, you talked about loading up the family and trying to do another road trip in an EV, but instead of going to Northern California in, was it the Rivian last time?
Yeah.
This time you guys were going to Vegas in the BMW i7, right?
Yeah, so the Rivian, if you're not regularly listening to the show, the Rivian thing's almost become like folklore. I actually did a TV appearance on ABCLA the other day, all around the Rivian experience, because it became like folklore. Because I basically just got all the fast chargers weren't working. We kind of got pretty much stuck somewhere up the 5 highway with a guy watching a documentary and his Polestar refusing to give up the pump. It was like every cliche. And my wife has like genuinely got, you know, has genuinely been traumatized by the whole experience of trying to look after kids at 11 o'clock at night in a bit of a dodgy parking lot trying to charge the car. So I said, we go to Vegas for a wedding. We went to an Elvis wedding, which was epic. And I was like, we're going to take an EV because it's an i7. It's beautiful. I need to drive it and it's going to be great. And she's like, I'm not taking an EV. So we had a big argument, but in the end, so it's like, you know, I was like, be okay. And Vegas is very different to going to Northern California. So we kind of agreed and off we went. And the i7 is a beautiful car. But, you know, we got like halfway through the journey. It was a terrible traffic, but we got to a Walmart and it's like, don't worry, there's 12 chargers. Well, actually there were like 5. And of course there was a queue when you get there. And then you've got this kind of like Taycan, EQS, i7. There was a couple of the Hyundai's and EV7 Kia. And we're all just sort of sat there, and then the kind of democracy of it all, like some You always get like the union official, don't you? Like the standing out, like, I'm going to organize this. Like, you're first, you're second, you're third.
Yeah.
So we're all just like waiting in parking lots. And it wasn't, I mean, the reality wasn't too bad. I waited for like 25 minutes and then charged for 20 minutes on a fast charger, and on I went. And then I got to the hotel and I charged fully up to 100% at a level two charger at the hotel at the Paris I stayed at. And then I was like, okay, that's okay. I just need to charge on the way home. We're done. But then in the hotel, some, trying to think the appropriate word I can use, some arse parked a gas-powered BMW on one of the four electric chargers in the hotel. It was a BMW 4 Series with Diamante, with like a special Diamante BMW badge.
Yeah. Okay.
So he was like living the dream. And I think he just parked it there in spite. I think it was just like a political statement, parked it there for 3 days to basically block an electric charger. So you're like living with all this anxiety. And then we drove home and we stopped to the same chargers and we queued for another 20 minutes and we charged it up and we got home. So it wasn't anything like as bad. It's the psychology of it. It's like, I've got to think about where I'm going to charge. I reckon both ways, it cost me about, it added about 40, 45 minutes to my journey both ways.
Okay.
And that's the problem, right? Because the 970 is a beautiful car, but is it worth it over a 7 Series gas-powered car where I take all of that stress away? And that's the problem. It just isn't. So then your electric car becomes your second car and you take your gas car on your long journey. And it's all about the psychology and it's all about turning up at that charger and everybody else standing there going, oh, I can't believe this. How long is it going to be? Is somebody going to jump in? How is it like going to take me an hour? Like, is it going to charge when I plug it in? What if it doesn't? What do I do? And like all these people are having this conversation, you know, they've all gone back and talked to their friends and their friends are going, oh, that sounds terrible. You know, and you know, the rest of the family's gone into Walmart and spent too much money because they're bored. And the whole experience is just bad. And, you know, this is what has to be solved. But, you know, i7 is a nice car.
And I was going to ask about, the i7 specifically. I mean, you drove the M version, right? The i7 M70. This thing is a nearly $170,000 starting price.
You know, like you have like a psychology in your head of like how expensive a car is. You know, like you think, oh, like an S-Class Merc, well, that's kind of like 80, 100 grand or whatever. You sort of think about where you think a car is. And I drive so many cars. I always play this game with, well, my wife is like, and she works in the luxury goods industry. She's really good at like picking quality. And I always play this game like, how much is this car? And she's normally really good. Now we've been together a while. And she said, I think it's about 100 grand. And I was like, no, it's 170.
Yeah.
And it was the kind of like the furthest out we've been. And, you know, part of the problem is like this democratization of luxury, because I've driven a 3 Series and it's got, you know, a lot of the same stuff. You know, the touchscreen display, the software is basically the same, or you use Apple CarPlay as I did in the i7. So like you end up like, what am I really buying? It's got automatic doors, which are an option anyway, but you know, you got to be a bit lazy not to pull the door shut. You've got a bit more space. You've got massaging seats. Well, that's pretty commonplace these days on a Kia.
Yeah.
You got this big screen in the back, but like, okay. You know, you can get an iPad. You know, there's like nothing. It's hard to do a luxury car now because so much of this stuff is available on a, you know, on a 50 grand mainstream car. My Genesis is GV60, which, you know, our family car, that's, you know, we pay $500 a month for that. And that's got 80% of what that BMW
had. Yeah. You know, you were talking about when you get into sort of feeling the anxiety of finding the charging stations and all that stuff. And we were talking before about the manufacturers giving access or getting access to the Tesla supercharging network. And that seems to be ideal. Now, I think it's going to get a little clogged up once everybody has access to a Tesla charger. But as someone who owns a Ford Lightning, I just got, you know, the note, you know, where I could go in and order the free adapter now. So I already did it. They said, I don't know how long it takes to get it, but like, we're here, we're making your adapter. And it allows us to go to the the Tesla supercharging network. It works on the big superchargers, but it doesn't work on like the home chargers or the smaller ones that some places have. So it, you get access to about 15,000 or so chargers out of the, I don't know what they have, 26 or 20.
Yeah, it's about it's a little over half the superchargers. So you've got to be careful as well. Like thinking about my Vegas trip, there's a lot more Tesla supercharging, but you got to make sure you can actually use it.
Right, you do. So, and it's interesting because another thought I had was, if you're following us on YouTube and we're just kind of scrolling, you can see the adapter. It snaps onto the front of the Tesla charging plug and then goes into your truck. And my immediate thought was, how many people are going to forget the adapter and just drive away? And hopefully you don't. I don't know if my truck will tell me, like, if I get into my truck, will it go, don't forget your adapter? You know, like, the reminder was like, don't forget you have something in the back seat, you know, that kind of thing. Or your cell phone is still plugged in. Reminder, take your cell phone. I don't know that you can put the Tesla plug back on the charging station with the adapter on it. I don't think so.
That wouldn't work. Yeah.
So that's probably the thing. But I've been in malls and stuff, not necessarily with Tesla superchargers, but I go to like a mall in Santa Monica and there's all the free chargers there, and everyone just throws them on the ground and runs them over, and they're all smashed and there's wires hanging out and nobody puts them back where they're supposed to go, and probably there's probably 20 of them in the garage and 7 of them work because the rest have all been kind of smashed. But I was just trying to think of how many people are going to forget it, because the emails that we got saying it's free, you can sign up, and you can sign up to the end of June, between now and June 30th. If you have an EV from Ford, like the Ford Lightning or a Mach-E.
Yeah, which Edmunds does as well. Yeah.
Yeah. You can get it for free. But after that, I think it's going to be like $230. But it's just kind of an interesting thought, is maybe it does change the game, as you were talking about doing those big long trips and not,
I mean, great
access.
great for Ford customers, terrible for Tesla customers.
I would agree, and it's going to be bad for all the customers once every manufacturer is on board with this, and a lot of them announced the partnerships, but they haven't really done it yet. So I think for like the next 2 months or so, Ford and Tesla are going to have a field day, or the Ford people were going to be excited about getting access. But at some point, especially that trip to Vegas on a holiday weekend, good luck. That the lines at those Tesla stations are going to be hours long.
Especially when you turn up in your Lightning truck, you know, like you've just bought your Model 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, all our charging. And the other thing is, like, the Fords don't charge that fast either. So if you look at the Edmunds EV charging test stuff, we get a cheeky plug-in. If you look at that stuff, you know, the Fords don't charge very fast. So you're going to, you know, you've just bought your Model 3 Highland, you're feeling really smug about yourself. Then you roll up in your Lightning and steal the last charger. And it's like you're going to be sat there.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit there.
See you in an hour, my friend.
Trying to fill up my 116 kilowatts or whatever of battery. Going, hey, good luck. And it's going to take a while. Anyway, so that's i7. But you also were driving the i5. Is that what you're driving now?
Yeah, so the i5 was
it, and it won awards from you guys.
It did. It won the Edmunds top rated EV car for 2024. We've actually got just added to our long term test fleet, so we'll have it for the next year at least. And this is the M60, and it's so fast. It's the first time I've got it parked outside my house at the moment, and it's. It's a lovely car. It's so comfortable. It's near silent and it's bonkers fast. I mean, it's got like 600 horsepower. Is it 590 horsepower?
Yeah, 593 horsepower. It says 16, 3.7, but BMW in the past, especially with their gas engine cars, I guess, they've always been, the cars have performed a little better than what they've specced out, which is kind of odd, but
we haven't had ours to the track yet, because it's literally, we've had it like a few days. I just happened to have grabbed it from the office. It's the first BMW in a while I've liked the aesthetics of. It's got a super comfortable interior. It's a nice size, the 5 Series in the US. The 7 Series feels a bit big. You know, drives beautifully. The only thing about it, you know, they've obviously taken this approach where they'll do the electric i5, you have the gas 5 Series or the M5, whatever. It's just the performance is crazy, but it's just not, maybe it's because I'm old, but it's just, it's not exciting in the same way. I had a very strange experience. This is going to sound very look at me, and believe me, I spent most of my life in real world cars. But we happen to have an SL63 in, the AMG one Mercedes. That is a beautiful car. God, that's a lovely thing. And I drove it. I picked my little daughter from school up, and she got incredibly excited about sitting in the back with the roof down. And it sound, that's still the V8. It's not the hybrid one. It sounds fantastic. I think it looks good now. It has a, it's so well set up that it does a really good job of being like a kind of Floridian cruiser 1 minute and then a sports car the next. I was really impressed with it. And I drove that into the office and I just thought I could actually really see myself like having one of these. And then if I could afford it, clearly. And then I drove home in the i5, which in many ways is even faster. But it's just like, it's just so silent, and it's just, you're just losing that sort of like visceral sensation of an engine and a V8 and the noise and the gearbox and the whole shebang. And maybe like my kids will not even think about it. But yeah, it's
the,
kind
the
of...
The SL, it's been a couple of years, but I drove the SL and it's... I agree with you. I really liked the car, but it's one of these cars that's kind of a sports car, but it feels heavy but solid and in a good way. It, and for as quick as the car was when I drove it, it was like, this thing feels way too heavy to be this fast. But it felt just solid in a quality way to me. Like everything just had like a weight to it. That was interesting and it was good. It felt like you were getting your money's worth.
I haven't driven the coupe yet. One of our team went and drove it in, I think it was in Spain, but the coupe engine, I saw it at Car Week last year. It looks a really, really pretty car. You know, 911 rival, but you know, Mercedes is doing a really nice job. Ironically, I think they're doing a really nice, much better job with their gas powered cars at the moment than they are their EVs. But yeah, I thought this is a cool thing. It's a 2+2 now as well, not just a 2-seater.
Yeah, but there's not much you can do in the back. I guess your little kid could fit in the back, but that's...
Yeah, you could just get a child seat, and it wasn't better than... Yeah, I mean, it's actually slightly marginally better than you might think. You could stuff a couple of people home in there on the way home from the, you know, way home from the boozer.
yeah, and I agree. It's an interesting car, and I do like that car a lot. And I guess it was about a year or so since I've driven it. So I don't know what kind of changes have really been made since.
I think like the AMG version has come along
So I don't think there was a whole lot a change there. From
this was metallic brown as well. You know, we start to see a lot of brown cars at the moment. Nobody will ever buy them, but they look cool. It was like a sort of matte brown.
Yeah. So the one that I drove, I think, is the one that you guys might have used in your testing, like for the press car. I drove like the bright blue, you know, like on the Edmunds website.
Yeah. See, that's a pretty combination.
Yeah. So on the Edmunds website, you got like the bright blue. It's kind of a blue green, but it's kind of this bright blue with, you know, almost the white or cream interior. And I believe this is the one that I drove as well. I mean, after you guys tested it and beat on it for a while, then they sent it to me.
Yeah.
Actually, but you're right. This is a nice color.
It's silly you talk about that. Sometimes it's like the other way around, where we get cars late because they know we're going to test it.
Yeah.
So like, it has to go away and be prepped for testing. It's quite a, you know, everybody wants to make sure that if you're going to take it to the test track, that the car's like in proper condition. And obviously, these cars, the press cars, get shared around a lot. So it's like, you know, that Matt the motorator's had it. We better send it back to the workshop and make sure it's, you know, sorted out.
You know,
hasn't whacked a curb and put the suspension out at joint.
What's interesting is I drive cars just for an opinion. I don't really do the testing and stuff. I leave that to the guys that know how to do it, like you guys over at Edmunds. But I always wanted to get a hold of the press cards and just kind of give my thoughts, my opinion on it, sort of a entertainment view of it as opposed to a journalistic view, because I always thought what I'd done on the podcast side is a little bit more automotive entertainment than journalism.
Is this entertainment?
And for me, it is. So there was a
maybe we should have told me.
For a while, I don't know why it was Ford, but Ford had reached out, and when they got a few of their press cars in, they would hit me up and go, "Do you want to drive this first?" Like their high performance cars. And I'd say, "Sure, why would I be first?" And they said, "Because you're not track testing the car, and we want somebody to break it in for, you know, a couple of hundred miles." So I got access to some of the first like Mustang GTs and I think maybe like a Bullet or something like that when they got it in the press fleet, maybe even a GT500 from a while back. I got like three cars and I got when the first one, they're like, "Here, take it for a week and then we'll put it out to the other people. Just do what you do," which is mostly around town and whatever on the freeway. They go, "We just want to get some break-in miles on it." I was like, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to.
It's funny. We did an Edmunds U-Drags this week. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it up there because of other commitments, but like several of the manufacturers actually, I'm not going to name names because I'll give too much away, but several of the manufacturers actually came down with engineers and stuff to make sure the cars were prepped. It's funny. It's great when you come up with a concept that gets people so excited. I mean, obviously it happens in the racing community, but the fact that we're doing these head to heads and it's like, oh, better make sure that it's, you know, the clutch is fine and X is fine and everything's good.
Yeah.
But then it makes it a different education because suddenly I was like, whoa, hang on a minute. We got like 10 people. We've got like a bunch of VIPs there that we need to, you know, provide a toilet for.
This is what we're talking about. It started out as something that's entertainment, just something kind of fun, and pinning cars up that may be similar, but also pinning cars against each other that are not really that similar, but maybe performance wise on paper, but they're wildly different cars. Right.
Yeah.
And, I think the one that's posted now is what is NSX versus Lucid.
Yeah. What was the last one? I know I should know this. I can't even remember what
the last one
is
published,
that we
I think, was Acura NSX versus a Lucid.
So we try and sort of mix it up a little bit. We go and shoot a bunch of these in a batch because otherwise it becomes impossible to do. But it's great fun. I couldn't do this week's, which was a real shame. Yeah, the big one that's done really well for us is Z06 against the McLaren. That did super well for us.
Yes, Z06 versus McLaren. I didn't know you guys had like a whole leaderboard going on with it. So I thought you guys were just going out there screwing around.
Edmunds.com/UDrags. We have the whole. You don't seen that before? Yeah, there's a whole leaderboard. This has become a thing.
Yeah, here we are.
Look at
the
that.
Leaderboard.
And that's why all these like engineers now, like when it came around, they're like going, we also know, again, manufacturer made nameless, and I'm not going to tell you where the facility is that we use, but it's used by a manufacturer for testing. And they admitted to us that they had gone out with a whole bunch of tires and a whole bunch of setup stuff and replicated. They basically looked at the video, looked at where all the course was laid out and were practicing the Edmunds U-Drags. And it's really fun. Like this was something that we came up with because we thought back drag racing was getting boring and we wanted to do something a bit different and a bit more us. And now, you know, people are taking it seriously and wanting to send pro drivers and God knows what else. So it's entertaining. But yeah, if you go to Edmunds.com, we're going to devote a whole show to this because there's some really interesting stuff in here. But like McLaren 765LT is still the fastest. I mean, that thing's just a rocket ship. 911 Turbo S, second fastest. That's, you know, Z06 Super Chevy.
The McLaren 750S just came out, and it's basically a refined version of the 765LT. I don't know that the 765LT would be faster than the 750.
I think it would. So because the 750, because you had the 720S, the 750S is like the facelifted 720. I think
but it's got a little bit more power. I think it's got the power. It's got the power of the 765, but like with the nicer, comfortable seats of the 720.
Yeah, it'll weigh a bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll have to check that out. And I'm eager to get my twin turbo Mustang out there at some point. We're gonna have to find something to race it against. I'm kind of waiting
to come
for.
Up. Well, the GT 500, which sadly we are finally about to sell, that was a car that was like the genesis of the idea, because we had. It kept getting losing in drag races. And we were like, why is this? You know, this is such a shame, because this is a really, you know, this is a great car. And the drag racing is not showing itself off, because it struggles for traction off the line. And then you lose all the fact that it brakes and turns really, really well. So what we said, what we need is a format that actually suits a GT500. And that was the germ of the idea. So that's part of where we came up with U-Drags, and we've gone from there.
Yeah. Well, we'll get it out there at some point. There was a revision made. So when SEMA Garage worked with CARB on getting it emissions approved, there was a change that needed to be made. It sounds kind of silly, but the turbos are mounted down low, and that's where the air filter is. And CARB is going, no, you need the air filter to be like near the factory air box, because there's like a carbon filter or whatever. So the guys at Hellion Turbo developed almost like a belly pan that goes from the turbos, and it's like a long thin air box, and then goes back up to like the factory air box area. And then, so it sucks in air from under the hood where the air filter would be. Goes through like this 1-inch tall, you know, 3 foot wide belly pan to the twin turbos, and they've developed it and it's approved, but they are working on a way to make it less expensive, because they made one out of like aluminum. They like fabbed one up and welded it, and that's a big cost and whatever. So they're like, no, we're gonna find a way to just like make a big plastic version of this thing. It's some sort of molded piece, and kind of waiting for that. But the system's done, and kudos to them. They were able to do a twin turbo aftermarket kit, got emissions approval on it. So I would like to hand the car over for testing and everything, but I kind of want to be able to hand over like the fully emissions legal version of the car, because it's still a test piece. I think that would be kind of fun, and see what you guys can do with it.
We're also still working on trying to get like Hennessy along.
Yeah,
Hennessy would be fun, but they're not quite ready. Yeah, we've told them there's a few things that we think would be, you know, like Top Gear's no more, so like the Top Gear test track numbers used to be such a big deal, and you know.
Yeah, and you know, because my thought on it was just like Edmunds is doing such a good job and making so much fun content with the OE cars, like. It would be fun to spice it up with a little bit of aftermarket stuff.
Yeah, we could do that. We've talked about it. There's a few, as you'd imagine with these things, there's always a few kind of like, there's a few things, two hoops you have to jump through, but yeah, we're definitely looking at that. And obviously we did the bike thing at the end of last year. If you haven't seen that, check that out on YouTube.
Yeah.
So we did,
the motorcycle was fun.
The motorcycle stuff, you know, that was a bit like, you know, you can imagine the conversations we had with our legal team. Our legal team is super helpful, but it's like, right. So what we want to do, right, we want to basically get the world's fastest motorbike and a pro rider, and we're going to stick him next to us in a 911 Turbo S, and then we're going to do like, you know, 170 miles an hour, then hit the brakes together.
Yeah, and then turn around and go back.
Yeah, turn around, and then do the same thing on the way back. And our, you know, our trap speed at the end will be around, you know, 180, 190, you know. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, who did you get to ride the bike?
A guy called Chris. Oh god, I'm having a complete brain fart. His name. It'll come to me. Come to me. It's a good job we're doing it live. But no, I mean, I'm joking a little bit about like some of the, you know, what I was saying about like the idea of it. In all honesty, and this the amount of work that we do to make sure that everything kind of lines up. It's, yeah. It always looks flippant on camera, but there's a lot of professionalism that goes into this, and that's why it's really hard to do, and that's why we go and film it like two or three times a year. So
yeah, well, now that manufacturers are catching on and they're out there like taking the air temperature, and
yeah, I don't. We have the air temperature. We take the weather station. I'm not kidding you. We have a weather station we use for testing, and we can use for corrections. And we take that along. So we're building in all these factors. But yeah, it's a big operation that we kind of dreamt up, and there's a hell of a lot goes into it. So I don't want to give anybody the impression that they're sort of playing around here. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see what the next one is that you were teasing when it comes out soon, I guess. Like you said, you film a few at a time. So
yeah, film
yeah,
a few and then drop them out.
We're gonna have to figure out a good time to bring
Chris
you on.
Moore. Chris Moore, sorry. Lovely guy. I hope he's not listening. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, well, this is what happens. I put you on the spot live. All right, so what's coming up? Is there anything else we're missing? We can kind of wrap things up, I think.
Formula One this weekend. Very excited about the Grand Prix.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah. I used to work in Formula One. I'm still a massive geek. Probably quite glad I don't work in it now. There's like 23 races a year. It's like, I mean, it'd be great if you've got like a selfish single lifestyle, but I don't know how you do it if you're a, you know, if you're a family man. So that's what else we got? What else we got coming up?
When do you guys drive the Macan EV? Because I feel like that's going to be
Macan EV is big news. Later, more like April, more sort of April time. I'm driving the going out to Spain to drive the Taycan in a couple of weeks. So that's actually confirmed. Again,
yeah,
we were talking earlier about, you know, EV pace of change. Like the Taycan, it's basically the midlife refresh. Big change, like charging speed, range, performance. Big overhaul. Technology is moving that fast. So I'm really excited about going to drive
overall,
that.
I think it's just got different battery technology or some revision that they're doing.
Yeah, different battery technology, charging technology. There's a lot going into it, but it does mean if you've got a Taycan right now, still a great car, but you know, often like a mid-cycle refresh is, you know, a slightly different nose job and all the rest of it. Whereas actually this is technologically quite a big step forward. So excited about driving that in Spain. We just drove the DB12 Volante, the Aston Martin.
Car.
I didn't do it. One of the team drove that. So, yeah, we've got a ton of stuff going on.
And
I'm forgetting forgetting most of it. It's late in the day.
March 7th, about a week from now, is the Rivian R2. I don't.
Yeah, I'm hoping
or the unveiling of that.
That's down in Laguna Beach, and I'm potentially going down for that. I've got a few other things going on, but we've definitely got people there. I might personally go down as well to take a look at that. So that's an exciting car, Model Y rival, 40 to 60 grand, that kind of region.
Yeah.
So a bit like the Fisker.
Yeah, okay.
It's all happening. I mean, it's honestly like a crazy busy time. We've got people like in Europe. We've got like several trips to Europe a month at the moment for various different events. And so, yeah, it's all happening. It's exciting. It's such an exciting time. It's a weird time because it's almost like every week it's changing. You know, EVs are in, EVs are out. Timelines are shifting. This is on sale. That's on sale. We've pulled it off sale. There's so much going on.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We'll just, we'll catch up on things next week. I'm looking forward to it. And, yeah, we'll have to plan the podcast around some of these trips. If you're going to go to Spain.
I'm going to Spain for, it's literally like for a day. I mean, everybody sounds like super glamorous. Do you know my flight? This sounds spoiled, but my flight schedule back is Seville, Amsterdam, Amsterdam, Paris, Paris, LAX in one day. So it's great. Yeah.
You're not even going to go outside. You're just going to hop from airport.
I'm not
to
suggesting
airport.
That going to Seville to drive a Porsche is not a massive privilege. It's a massive privilege, but like the idea that, you know, you're sitting around quaffing Rioja is, you know, reality is you're sitting on a plane banging out the copy.
Yeah, right.
And nobody listening is going to feel sorry for me at all, and rightly so.
No, I don't feel sorry for him, but it's nice to think about it anyway. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.